And a very good morning to you. It's 9:30 here at Sun Sounds of Arizona in Tucson. This is a live reading of the Green Valley News for Wednesday, 7th day of May. Glad to have you along, Mark DeGroft with you. A special good morning and a welcome to Anna Arnold, who's a new listener this morning. Taking a look at today's weather, high today will be 81 after a low of 55. Humidity is currently 37 degrees, cloud coverage is 33%. Wind is out of the west at 11 miles per hour. A 24% chance of rain today. Sunrise happened this morning at 5:32 and will set tonight at 7:08. Sunshine early, followed by cloudy skies this afternoon, high of 81. Partly cloudy skies tonight and tomorrow, 89 degrees. And looking at triple digits towards the end of the week. Okay, let's see what's happening in the Green Valley of Sorita area this morning. The Canyon Club at Quail Creek has only been open for a couple of weeks, but it's already become a part of resident Susan Bryceland's morning ritual. When I first came over here, I only had one word to describe it, and that was wow, with two exclamation points, Bryceland said. I come here every morning. It's a nice way to wake up in the morning, be on your treadmill and looking out at the Santa Ritas. On Monday, Bryceland and her cousin Suze Brummett of Oklahoma were sitting next to a fire pit enjoying the view with strawberry banana smoothies with Horizons Bistro inside of the club. And the bistro is not open to the public. They'd had breakfast there a couple of days before, spoke highly of the food and the service. The 40,000-square-foot club was unveiled at a grand opening on April 3rd and to its residents on the 16th. Just beyond the front doors are a great room with a fireplace and an 8-by-12-foot video wall that shows images from around the world. If visitors continue straight through, they'll be facing the Santa Ritas from a large outdoor terrace complete with a large stove and pizza oven on the right and a fireplace and seating area on the left. And a short distance away, there's a water feature and fire pit. Back inside, residents will find the bistro with a full kitchen, a wine bar, coffee bar, and meeting rooms for clubs and organizations on one side. On the other side, there is a billiards room, a 10,000-square-foot fitness area with state-of-the-art equipment. Further down is the Serenity Spa, the Dapper Dog Barbership Shop, which is for humans, locker rooms with dry saunas, an indoor pool, and access to a large beach entry outdoor pool and a 22-person hot tub. They really paid a lot of attention to detail, Bryceland said of the interior work. In the bistro, laser-edge copper panels and mining photos pay homage to Arizona's copper industry. And in one hallway, a large artwork features running horses when looking at it south and a desert scene when looking north. Carrie Kelly, who is Robeson Community's Senior Vice President of Residential and Commercial Design, said the kudos go to Kimberly Timmons Interiors of Denver. Robeson has worked with the firm more than 20 years, she said. Kelly said that founder Ed Robeson had an overall vision for the facility and that it was built with input from herself and architect Lee Sanderson. Many of the features are new to Robeson properties, including the full metal roof, sound absorption materials, and the exterior hardy boards and battens, said Scott Sides, who is the community project manager for Robeson. Clear alder is a dominant design feature throughout the tall windows and high ceilings, some reaching 30 to 40 feet high with skylights. Quail Creek has about 3,200 homes. Construction continues. When Robeson realized they were about to outgrow the existing fitness center, they began to think about how to create a new facility unique to the area, but also unique to Robeson, she said. Hence the reason it got so big and so large. It's much more than just a fitness center. It's social meeting rooms, game rooms. It's the bistro, billiards. It's fitness, Kelly said. It got large. When Mr. Robeson came down for the grand opening, he asked, how did he get so big? And I showed him proof on some of the very preliminary notes that go back to 2017 that showed his handwriting on there saying bigger, bigger, bigger. And so it was pretty cute. They began designing the club in 2017, broke ground in November of 21. Supply chain issues, labor shortages tied to COVID-19 held up the project for a time, according to Kelly. The former fitness center will now be home to an aerobics class. The Canyon Club is unique, and not just because of its size, Kelly said. Mr. Robeson just really wanted to emphasize the lifestyle, and that's what sets us apart from our competitors. Anybody can build a house, but we build a lifestyle. We build dreams, or we may help make dreams come true because of that lifestyle. Kelly declined to say how much the project costs and asked if member fees will go up as a result of the project. Tim Fudge, the director of facilities for Robeson, said they take a lot of things into consideration in their annual budget process. Dues go up for other reasons, he said. 9:36 here at Sun Sounds. County supervisors asked for details on the county's wildlife mitigation Tuesday as it goes back to staff for more information and updates as the area faces a seasonal outlook for drought. County senior advisor Amaris Vasquez told the board NOAA seasonal project outlook severe, and the outlook looks for extreme drought conditions in southern Arizona. The organization says there's a 50 to 70% chance of above normal temperatures from May through July. And forecasts show that southeast Arizona has an elevated likelihood of significant wildfire during this activity season. Tuesday's draft plan was county staff's first attempt to meet the board's directive to develop a wildfire mitigation plan during its February 4th meeting. The move was introduced by Supervisor Steve Christie, who told the board in February that the Los Angeles area wildfires that had burned for nearly a month shortly before his request played a role in wanting the plan. Christie told County Administrator Jan Lesher on Tuesday that the draft plan was a good start, but he noted it did include an evaluation of all county property and needed fuel mitigation. He also said he had concerns about HOAs preventing homeowners from creating wildfire defensible spaces that violate its rules. Christie said the concern was raised in a letter from a constituent. This is concerning that there are HOA regulations and stipulations that prevent an HOA from involving itself in the mitigation of wildfire danger and implementing the FireWise plan, he said. And I'm hoping the county can either take a local county regulation that can override this or some type of relief at the state legislature. Christie said it isn't much that can be pushed down in the road or other sessions, but needs immediate attention. He also said the Green Valley Council provided him with a statement that it administered grant funds for its member HOAs in the past for buffelgrass mitigation, but the money was used up 2 years ago. They believe that $50,000 underlined in the plan would be a good starting point for mitigation assistance for the 25,000 residents and 100-plus HOAs in Green Valley, Christie told the board. They also went on to state that they think the projected cost range is insufficient for the needs of the county. I could spend a good portion beyond the $50,000 seed money in Green Valley, Christie said. Lesher said that staff would be working on providing a comprehensive response to the concerns Christie raised during the meeting, including concerns about wildlife danger impacts and homeowners insurance. Supervisor Jen Allen also raised concerns about making the emergency My Alert system able to single out wildfire alerts for residents who only want to know about those dangers. She also raised a concern about how rural fire districts were being supported to meet wildfire events. Because that seems like a real crux in the plan, is that we've got some small, tucked-away fire departments that are operating on a shoestring budget, and they're all volunteers, Allen said. And you know, struggling to get water trucks and some of the basic amenities to be able to be responsive. Lesher told the board that the county is looking at county-owned property like Old Tucson, the Sonoran Desert Museum, and other rural areas, and working with the county assessor to get the assessed value. She said the county, as a government, doesn't pay tax on its properties. If we did, that would be the commitment on behalf of the county to that fire district that serves the area, Lesher told the board. And if you look out, again by Old Tucson and the Desert Museum, they are supported in large part by either volunteer or rural fire districts. And the largest entity that might be providing a tax base would be us, and we don't. Lesher said initial looks add up to about $900,000 that the county would have paid into fire districts, adding that staff would be noodling through that more and would report back. As advocates for health care programs and seniors continued to sound an alarm about GOP plans to roll back Medicaid programs, Republican leaders in Washington postponed a committee meeting last week, which is intended to lay out a specific plan to cut hundreds of billions of dollars in Medicaid funding. The House Energy and Commerce Committee, which has been tasked with finding up to $880 billion in Medicaid spending over the next decade, has announced that lawmakers would mark up the budget bill today, May 7th. But that plan was pulled back Thursday, tentatively rescheduled for the week of May 12th. Dr. Larry DeLuca, an Arizona physician who advocates for Medicaid programs, said this week that he wasn't surprised to see GOP lawmakers struggling to find a way to cut the Medicaid program. I think what's happening is that they're also figuring out that this seemed like a really good idea on the campaign trail, and as we start looking at the realities of trying to reform or change or eliminate Medicaid, people are starting to get nervous because they're realizing their own care is at risk, DeLuca said. The decision to punt on the May 7th markup comes after some Republicans in swing districts, including Southern Arizona Representative Juan Ciscomani, warned leadership that they were opposed to significant Medicaid cuts. Ciscomani has voted to advance the budget package that included a proposal to find up to $880 billion in Medicaid cuts, and he has said that he wants to eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse from the system, but at the same time, he has said he won't support a cut to the program that reduces Medicaid benefits for vulnerable populations the program was intended to serve, like the working poor, individuals with disabilities, single mothers, and the elderly. And last week, Ciscomani was among 13 GOP lawmakers who signed on to a letter to House Speaker Mike Johnson that expressed concern about the potential cuts. Cuts to Medicaid also threaten the viability of hospitals, nursing homes, safety net providers nationwide, the lawmakers wrote, and many hospitals, particularly in rural and underserved areas, rely heavily on Medicaid funding, with some receiving over half of their revenue from the program alone. Providers in these areas are especially at risk of closure, with many unable to recover. When hospitals close, it affects all constituents, regardless of health care coverage. Ciscomani's position earned him praise from some local health care leaders. We applaud Congressman Juan Ciscomani for taking action in support of preserving Medicaid coverage, said El Rio Health CEO Clint Kuntz. Medicaid is a vital lifeline for millions of Americans, and even small cuts to this program could cause catastrophic events for the physical and economic health of our local communities. As a community health center, El Rio Health is proud to serve these patients every day and ensure that they receive the care they need to live healthy, productive lives. The Arizona Healthcare Association said in a Facebook post that its members were grateful for Ciscomani's leadership in protecting Medicaid and the people it serves. Cutting Medicaid hurts seniors, families, and rural communities, and mislabeling provider assessment dollars as fraud only makes things worse. These dollars are vital to keeping hospitals and nursing homes open. Let's keep pushing for reform that supports it, not cuts it. But Senator Mark Kelly said the true test would be in Ciscomani's vote once the legislation comes together. Well, we'll see what he does when he votes, Kelly told the Tucson Sentinel in late April. I encourage him to vote against the thing that will likely include some big cuts to Medicaid. At a March Medicaid forum in Tucson, Kelly said Republicans were seeking to cut Medicaid so they could extend President Donald Trump's tax cuts, which he characterized as a giveaway to the richest people here in America. What they're trying to do is take a benefit that lower income and disabled people rely on, and they're trying to take that money that goes to pay for that thing. They're trying to put it into the pockets of billionaires, said Kelly, a Democrat first elected to the Senate back in 2020. That's the reality of what's going on here. As lawmakers debated on how to slash Medicaid spending, members of the House Freedom Caucus called for moving forward with the cuts. In a May 1st letter, House Freedom Caucus members, including Arizona Republicans Andy Biggs, Eli Crane, and Paul Gosar, said that the expansion of Medicaid eligibility to 138% of the federal poverty level, or just under $37,000 a year for a single working mom with two kids, had driven the cost of the federal program way too high. The conservative GOP lawmakers say the expansion of Medicaid under President Barack Obama's Affordable Care Act should be reversed. Under that expansion, many states, including Arizona, increased eligibility for Medicaid to 138% of the federal poverty level. The lawmakers said that the cost of federal government is too high. Under Obamacare's expansion, states received a 90% federal match for able-bodied working-age adults, far more than the 60% average for more traditional populations like low-income children and people with disabilities, they wrote. Medicaid has significantly moved beyond its 1965 intent, with able-bodied workers now making up the largest subgroup receiving Medicaid benefits. That puts the three Arizona GOP lawmakers and their colleagues at odds with Arizona business leaders, who have been warning that Medicaid cuts would lead to hundreds of thousands of low-income Arizonans losing their health insurance, which would cause major jobs and job cuts for hospitals and clinics. That, in turn, would likely lead to higher private health insurance premiums and other fiscal ripples that would damage the state's economy. The coalition of more than a dozen Arizona business associations, including Arizona Chamber of Commerce and Industry, the Arizona Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, urged Republican lawmakers in March not to cut the federal Medicaid funding that comes to Arizona because it would devastate the state's health care system, increase private insurance costs, and result in massive job losses statewide and reduce economic productivity. Last week, Republican leaders floated a new proposal that would involve per capita limits on how much the federal government would reimburse states rather than a reduction in a percentage of the federal match in the hope that it would not trigger expansion repeals in the red states. But disagreements over the details resulted in a decision to put off unveiling a plan next week. Republicans are melting down, Woodhouse said in a prepared statement. They've twisted themselves into knots to slash Medicaid to provide tax to the rich, but the American people have said hell no. They know their agenda to rip health care from millions of Americans is deeply unpopular and politically perilous. This delay is not the end of time. Trump and his Republicans are hell-bent on slashing taxes for the rich, no matter who they hurt and how many lose health care, Woodhouse said. The so-called moderate Republicans should stand their ground until these cuts are taken off the table for good. 9:49 and change here at Sunsounds. Thanks for listening. Mark DeGroft with you this morning. There was some hand-wringing along the I-19 corridor this week after the Wall Street Journal published a front-page story suggesting our interstate could soon be forced to dump its metric signage in the name of patriotism or national security. Take your pick. Given the last 3 months, I suppose anything could happen, but if we're going to make a decision like that, let's get all the facts. And this is written by Dan Shearer. The story uses it as its premise, a quote from U.S. Department of Transportation spokesman Nate Sizemore: when you're driving in the United States, it should be unmistakably American, not modeled after foreign systems. He added I-19 will be reviewed as part of the agency's broader efforts to restore American standards and ensure our infrastructure is easy to understand and navigate. The reporter then called Tucker Carlson. You remember him, the guy who cost Fox News nearly $800 million for promoting false claims about the 2020 election fraud. Even though he himself was skeptical of the lies, his network was reporting. It also cost him his job. Why Carlson? He's never been a fan of the metric system, apparently. Those of us trying to learn it in junior high in the 70s weren't either. Maybe the reporter called him because she knew he'd pop off. Carlson told the Wall Street Journal they're not using gallons of miles in North Korea. They're using the metric system. So are Iran and China. I can't imagine why we would want any of that in our country. He also deemed the metric system a security risk. Everyone is talking about missile defense. The first line of defense is to confuse the enemy on the road. No surprise that Carlson wasn't completely correct, but neither was the Wall Street Journal. Now, only three nations have not adopted the metric system, those being the United States, Liberia, and Myanmar. The latter two are in the process of doing so. President Ford pushed metric legislation in 1975, then President Reagan stopped it 7 years later, but many of those nations on the metric system don't completely embrace it. The United Kingdom, for example, still measures in miles and uses miles per hour on road signs. China is on metric, but also use some of its own measurements internally. In reality, there aren't just too many purists when it comes to metric, and that includes us. Remember those 2-liter soda bottles at the grocery store? In fact, all food packaged for retail sale in the United States is required to include metric measurements under the Fair Packaging and Labeling Act. Even our money is metric in 100 cents, as is photography, like 35mm film, 50mm lens. It's used in science and in medicine, vehicle production in the United States. Raise your hand if you own a metric wrench, and don't forget our military uses metric for distance measurements. A small handful of roads in the U.S. are partly marked in metric, but I-19 is special because it's the only fully metric interstate in the nation. That's because it was a pilot program for converting all of America's mileposts into kilometer markers. Crews were signing it in metric even before it was completed in 1978. But I-19 is a hybrid, too. Every foot of it is also marked in miles. You just have to crane your neck 90 degrees to read the signs. And, of course, speed limit signs are in miles per hour. That kind of takes care the air out of Dot's argument to go American. We're already there. As for Tucker Carlson, let's just promise we'll tear down the signs when the foreign tanks come rolling out of Mexico. The Ukraine did that to the Russians, and it was effective. And back in 2009, Arizona made noise about changing the metric sign to miles. Nearly every government entity opposed it, not to mention the business community, with most taking an if-it-ain't-broke, don't-fix-it stance. People liked the uniqueness and, frankly, were used to them. The state backed off, though it made more noise in 2012 when it was replacing road signs with a new reflective coating that made them brighter, more legible. At that time, they said kilometer signs would be replaced in the future. Well, that never happened. But just who gets the final say is the big question, the feds or the state. The road is entirely in Arizona, the Wall Street Journal pointed out, but I-19 is part of the federal highway system, and they paid for most of it, but the state owns it and the state operates it. ADOT had no comma for the journal, but without a specific order from the Trump administration, and that no comment might just tell you he will likely have the last word. It's 9:54. A 28-year-old Suarita man was arrested Wednesday in connection with child pornography investigation. Dominic Olson was arrested on suspicion of 7 counts of sexual exploitation of a minor, booked into the Pima County Jail, this according to the Suarita Police Department. According to court documents, the Arizona Crimes Against Children Task Force received a tip from Discord, a free messaging and communication platform, that one of their users was sharing child sex abuse files. Discord provided the task force the user's email address and IP address, which were traced to a Cox Communications account, court documents stated. Cox informed Suarita detectives that the IP address was connected to Olson's wife and the company provided them the coup address. Detectives served a search warrant in the 18,000 block of South Copper Basin Drive around 6:30 in the morning, seized several electronic devices. The home is in the neighborhood north of the Walmart Plaza. Olson's wife denied any involvement or even any knowledge regarding the Discord account or the possession of the materials, court documents stated, and the case remains under investigation, and those with information are asked to call Sahuarita Police Department at 520-351-4900 or 911 or 520-344-7000 during business hours. They can also call the tip line, and that number is 520-445-7847. Colossal Cave complaint has brought scrutiny and personnel changes. An anonymous complaint about a misconduct and lack safety and training procedures at Colossal Cave Mountain Park led the county to notify its management contractor, which made personnel changes to address the grievances. County Administrator Jan Lesher sent an update to the Board of Supervisors on Wednesday, saying Explore U.S. Management updated its procedures and revised cave procedures with protocols for cleaning and operation of the cave. Lesher also said the county is working on an extension lease agreement with Explore U.S. The complaint claimed that maintenance workers have stolen county property, including decomposed granite that was sold for profit. It also said that Explore U.S. holds biannual events in the ranch house, despite it lacking a certificate of occupancy, and said that daily smoking occurs in break rooms and facilities where it is prohibited. The complaint also noted sexual misconduct at Colossal Cave, claiming an employee was caught in self-gratification in a company vehicle at the ranch house while on the clock. The company also said there were persistent rumors of co-workers having sex in the cave and relationships between management subordinates. Pima County Attractions and Tourism Director Diane Frisch referred the questions to Explore U.S. The Kansas-based organization didn't respond as of Friday afternoon. Lesher's memo reported that personnel changes were also made at the park, but didn't address those complaints. And that, my friend, will take care of the reading of this morning's Sahuarita News. I want to thank you for joining me and ask you to stay tuned to Sun Sounds for further programming. And the reading of the grocery ads will be coming up at 11 o'clock and the Arizona Daily Star at noon. Thank you for listening. Have yourselves a wonderful day. See you next Wednesday. Mark DeGroff, take care.